This is a Clock Shelves Podcast Network production.
And welcome to another episode of MCU and Me. As always, I am Paul Casey, and I am once again joined by one of my new favorite people to talk to. Go ahead and reintroduce yourself, sir.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your favorite Ellsworth Hamilton Tallman here. How are we doing tonight, buddy?
Welcome back to the show.
Oh, sorry, man. You know, I forgot I did that on the first episode I was ever on, so I figured I'd come back with that. I was just showing the podcast to some people and re-listened to that first episode, and I forgot that's how I introduced myself, so thought I'd add a little spice to the night for you, man.
Well, it's always fun talking with you, no matter what name you go by or nickname or anything like that. And I'm excited. I have to say, I'm very excited to be doing these particular episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with you, because I don't know about you, but over the last few times we've done this, we seem to have found that there are, you know, the storyline episodes, and then there's sort of the case of the week and whatever. But because of how this episode ends, and definitely what's coming afterwards, which of course we'll talk about a little bit later, but out of these three episodes, those being episodes 14, 15, and 16, Tahiti, Yes Men, and End of the Beginning, for once, I think, out of all of these times we've done this, and I don't know if you feel the same way, I don't think there was a bad, quote-unquote, episode, or an episode that made me go, meh, it's there. And I feel like every other time we've done this, we've had that. But with this particular batch of episodes, I didn't feel that way about anyone in particular. I don't know how you feel.
I feel exactly like you do on this. We have three solid episodes that, you know, we don't really get. They continue the storyline. We're not getting our case of the week little mumbo jumbo here because, you know, we have a lot of our backbone and meat going on at this point in our story for our characters that, you know, they, and with what's to come, they cranked out three solid episodes that, you know, continue the story that we have going on, but also tie up some loose ends and begin some new ones.
And that's the thing. And, you know, it's something that we'll definitely be talking about over the course of this episode and the following few episodes. And we've actually touched upon it very briefly the last few times. But this is sort of one of those times when I wish more people had stuck with the show. You know, we've talked about it before. People either weren't interested at all or they fell off because, you know, it wasn't the characters they knew or whatever. All this stuff, if anybody wants to hear my views on this, they could definitely go back to the previous episodes where we've discussed this. But this is one of those times when I wish more people had stuck with them because as you and I talked about in the, I believe, the last batch of episodes, they had already, by this point, they had built up these characters. We now know these characters. We like these characters. We dislike some things about them as well, which I think is a good balance for the characters and the story overall. But now we are invested. And of course, you know, one would say, well, I hope by episodes 14, 15, and 16, you're invested. But not only are we invested, but they're also paying off things. They're paying off stories that they set up in the first episode. They're paying off stories that they set up in, you know, one or two of the movies, as we'll see with the end of the first episode that we're going to be discussing and into the second episode that we're going to be discussing. Like, they're paying off things and they're setting up more. And like, this is sort of the moment where, And I've argued before, you know, oh, if people just get to Captain America, the Winter Soldier, when that, you know, when the big twist happens that we'll be discussing over the course of these next few episodes of the podcast. But I would definitely say that even before that, with these, this right here is sort of the solid backbone of the show. Because even though we do get our case of the week with some of these, it's not how we felt about some of these case of the weeks before, where it's kind of boring and you have to look for the interesting aspect. I, like I said, from start to finish on each one of these, I couldn't look away.
Oh no, these episodes were those episodes that you don't realize how much time went by, because as soon as it ends, you have to watch the next episode. Like, there is no later on. That's how these episodes flowed. I agree. I hope that people that are watching it for the first time or tried to rewatch it and stuck through those episodes and made it this far into the show, because it is paying off. And as a first time viewer, you know, again, I got hyped, you know, I won't lie. I when watching it by myself, man, I jump out of my seat. I'm yelling at the TV. Come on. You know, I'm cheering. I'm booing. I'm going crazy over here.
And that's, of course, that's what they want. They want that emotion out of you. And I agree with what you said. You know, hopefully one of the things with this, and with you being the first time watcher, hopefully people are watching along. Again, we're trying not to spoil too much. And I know from where you are in your watch, you're a little bit ahead of this, and you also know stuff because of, you know, having known the films and whatever. But I definitely hope that, like you said, by this point, the people who have stuck with it are feeling very similarly to how you are, just in terms of, you know, cheering when you're supposed to cheer and booing when you're supposed to boo and getting shocked when you're supposed to be shocked and, you know, wondering what's coming next and all of that great stuff, all of those emotions that I think the writers and actors and everything want to evoke out of you.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I'm not saying I always cheer when I'm supposed to cheer. Sometimes I cheer when some people might not be cheering, but hey, you know. This first episode we got going on, Tahiti, you know, this one picks up where we left off on a very cliffhanger note. Was it not the were we talking about this before? Was this like a breaking point or something?
Yes, I believe it was. Let me double check my thing here. So yeah, the previous episode to this, which was Trax, was February 4th, 2014. And then this episode, Tahiti, picks up, it was March 4th, 2014. So there was 1 month in between. So they did take a little bit of a gap there. Not necessarily a Christmas break type of gap, but definitely there was a bit of a gap there, yes.
And this is Tahiti, just like Trax, with all the little dots.
Yes. You know, that
seems to be a running theme with them.
Well, so which, with Trax, I wasn't able to, but with Tahiti, I actually found where what it stands for.
Okay, what you got for me?
So, okay, obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, hopefully you've watched the episode and you know the big twist. So if not, go watch the episode, pause the show right here, and come back.
Spoiler alert!
Yeah, big spoiler. Project Tahiti, which is an acronym for Terrestrialized Alien Host Integrative Tissue, and then it just has I, so that's probably one, like the Roman numeral. But yeah, so Terrestrialized Alien Host Integrative Tissue 1.
So they stretched. They fucking stretched to make that Tahiti.
To be fair, I would argue that S.H.I.E.L.D. is the same thing. I feel like all of them, yes, even going back as when Stan Lee and all of them were writing these, it was probably, we want it to be this, let's find something to make it stand for.
Of course. And I like they do it with every acronym that they do across the universe. It does fit in. It's just... It's funny. I'm glad you found that out, though, man. That's actually kind of cool to know. And it makes sense. It does make sense. Hopefully, you know, spoiler alert.
Well, to be fair, I don't know why anybody would be listening to this if they didn't watch the episode. But again, they can't say that they weren't warned.
Right. No, you're right. I mean, I definitely wouldn't listen to it beforehand. We start this episode, you know, pretty dramatic. I'm not gonna lie, I was, you know, it's my girl right now. You know,
Sky.
Yeah, man, she's on the edge of her seat. You know, she's dying.
Well, okay, so before we go any further, let me ask you this. So, we've talked about it before, and I've talked about it with a few different people. So, have we talked about the fact, were you a Joss Whedon fan? Like, did you watch, you know, Buffy and Firefly and all of that? Or were you more of like a casual, hey, I know his name, hey, I know his credits, but I'm not necessarily like a big fan?
Yeah. I knew his name. I know his credits. I know what he's done. I've watched some of that stuff. I didn't watch it religiously. I haven't watched all of it by any means. You know, so.
Okay. So that being said, one thing that I know as, and again, you know, much like, you know, Lost, which is something that we've referenced a few times. And for the people who have not watched Lost, please just forgive me for a moment. I'm going to go into the weeds here. But, you know, after a few episodes, J.J. Abrams left working on Lost and whatever. And obviously with this, because Joss Whedon was working on the kind of the film side of the Marvel Universe and getting ready for Age of Ultron and things like that, he obviously wasn't working so much on this show. He left it to his brother, sister-in-law, and close friend Jeff Bell. We've talked about that in previous episodes. Go listen to that in the archives. But one thing, if you're someone like myself who knows Joss Whedon's work, you know that he or, you know, people who work on his shows tend to kill off major characters. It becomes a running meme sort of in the fandom of Joss Whedon that's what he does is, you know, at one point there was a joke are killed off by Joss Whedon's work than, you know, gun violence or whatever. Obviously that's, you know, an exaggeration, but it makes for a good joke. So again, now you didn't know that.
I'm so glad I didn't know that because I would have been fucking pissed. Because I would have been like, oh, he's about to kill my girl. He's about to kill my girl. I'm in love with this girl. He's about to kill off her. For what? Who? There's nobody to replace. Oh, man. I'm glad I didn't know that. Thanks.
Well, because that was going to be my question, because I remember when I watched this, it was so, and I mean, realistically, you could make the argument with Lost, not that any of those writers were known for, you know, killing off characters a lot, but that was one of the things with Lost was anybody can die at any time.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
That
and you had your ones who you thought were going to make it to the end of the show and whatever, but they, you know, if it served the purpose, they would kill off a main character, you know, to have a dramatic. And I mean, in my opinion, a
in all
good
fair,
show
that was a much different arrangement of you expected to lose some major characters there.
Right. But to be fair with this, it's sort of, and I think, again, I think it could go with any, you know, show, arguably, it shows you, if you lose somebody like Sky, obviously that doesn't happen, but if you lose somebody like Sky, it shows you the stakes are real. It really is life and death with regards to the storyline. you know, as opposed to you introduce, like, was it Mr. Poe or whatever? You know, they introduced him two episodes later or whatever. He died. That, to me, meant nothing because there were no stakes. We didn't know him well enough. But in theory, by this point, we know Skye. And if she were to die, it's, oh, wow, this is real. Again, that didn't happen. But it wouldn't. It would have. How could I say it?
No, I know what it would have done, and look, I would have been upset, but I would have probably been more fucking intrigued by the show, actually, just because you're right. I would have been like, holy shit, anybody can get it anytime, what's next?
Yes.
Okay, and I get that, and they put that edge of your seatness on there, and if you know, like you said, if you know this little backbone, and which a lot of people who are watching this probably did or do and probably thought that and, you know, were almost ready for it or expecting it. And that's, you know, I mean, I was expecting it anyways and it was scaring the shit out of me. Like, because I didn't know, because yes, it is. We do know her at this point, but I'm still like unsure how major of a player is she in this show and in the thing, you know what I mean? The show is about Coulson and his team, not Skye and her team.
Exactly.
So I'm over here, you know, nervous as shit, sweating, got a bucket, getting sick. Like, oh my God, you know, I haven't even seen like a really sexy scene yet that I wanted. And they're depriving me of that and they're going to kill her. Come on. Come on.
Well, of course, she doesn't quite pass away. We did get introduced to two new characters in this episode, though. I know we're kind of skipping around the plot here.
That's how we do this, though.
Yes.
We do the skippity skip.
We did get introduced to two new characters here. And John Garrett and Antoine Triplett. What did you think of the... I mean, obviously, they play a bigger part over the next few episodes and things. But okay. What did you think about these characters here?
Let me just say, Bill Paxton just kills it as that dude that, like... Is he a good guy with some bad ways or is he a bad guy with some good ways? You know what I mean? And that's what I like about this character. This character comes in and I'm not sure what to think about him. And I like that. I like the uneasiness. He's got this smoothness to him. You know, there's history here. He's got history with Coulson, but he kind of like fucks with him a little bit. I feel like he's the dude that would throw his thing on the table first if it was a measuring contest.
He's very charming, but he's also very smarmy and slick at the same time.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like that, exactly. And the other dude, I felt he was very dry, which I get because he's like supposed to be kind of another Ward kind of character. But it's like, so like automatically he like, the character gives off that I'm trying to live up to this expectation thing. And he just, I don't know. He just, I don't really feel too much about him. I didn't really, but he's nice and he's smart.
No, but you're right. It's, he almost was introduced kind of to be like a Ward type character.
Right. Like, you know what I mean? And I'm jumping ahead, but that's how he comes into the play. He comes in like already defensively, you know, when they introduce him.
And then he's Garrett's new guy, but Ward was Garrett's old guy. So he's
and
just
that's
like,
all, and that's all Garrett talks about.
Yes.
And Ward's like the best, you know?
Yeah,
and
he has, yeah, he knows he has these big shoes to fill and he's trying. It's one of those things. It's like when you start a new job and they talk about the previous person and you want to you know, and I've actually had this happen, where you want to be the one that they talk about, but you also know that you're different and you have different strengths and you want them to talk about that as well.
Right. No, I totally get that. So, yeah. But I mean, you know, they come in, you know, we get introduced to them because, you know, they definitely, so, you know, they definitely are a different type of team from the, you know, Shield. So we get to see a different, we have Coulson and his team. So now we're getting to see a different team, so to speak, or character inside of this, and he operates a little differently. So I like that aspect because we get to see how these different, like, captains, so to speak, you know, operate inside of SHIELD. You know, it's and now I understand why Ward, you know, you get an idea of why Ward is the way he is, which helps you to, you know, kind of relate to the character, and you're kind of like, you start to feel a little more something for him because you're like, oh, this is who he was groomed by. I kind of feel something for him.
Right. It's okay. So it's not the best example, and more than half of our audience probably won't be able to relate to it at all, but it's just a personal story from me, which is what I tend to do. So when I was growing up, and one of my best friends, Jake, who's actually been on this show a few times, often jokes that I'm really a 65-year-old man trapped in the body of a 20-something-year-old. But when I was growing up, my parents and my grandfather used to watch MASH a lot. So I love MASH. And one of the things that would happen on that show, and you could, I would argue you could say this about any cop show now, like, you know, like a Law and Order or something like that. Whenever somebody from a different division or something comes in and you have your characters who have been together for so long, they have a shorthand and they have a rapport with each other. You know, they have their little inside jokes, or they, you know, one of them could give the other one a look and they know exactly what that means. Whereas you have somebody who comes in and they want to do everything by the book, and they, you know, they're super this, or they have their way of doing it. And you, it's almost like looking into sort of a what if scenario. What if things were slightly different? What if our captain, like you said, you know, to use your word captain, what if our captain was this person? How different would things be? And I feel almost that's what Garrett is here. You know, sort of like Coulson, he's a little bit more laid back. You know, he's a by the book sort of guy for the most part, but he's a little laid back as well. He knows the strengths and the weaknesses of his team, and he kind of lets them do whatever. He lets them fraternize and get a little personal with each other, whereas Garrett seems like a very by the book, straight laced sort of guy.
And no distractions.
Yes. Like, and if he was the leader, would Fitzsimmons, for example, be able to make the jokes that they make or have the fun that they have? Probably not, you know.
Right.
And that's sort of what I feel when I see this, you know, again, is sort of, well, one of the feelings. We know some of, you and I know some of the other feelings that I have. But that's, right. You know, we'll get into that a little later. But, you know, that's one of the things that I think of is, you know, it's sort of that thing of, like you said, it's a different captain or whatever. And, you know, so sort of if things were a little different and Garrett had put together this team, it wouldn't be the same. It would be almost a ship full of people like Ward, whereas Coulson put together sort of this ragtag group and it fits, you know.
You know, it does. I agree. It does fit. And that's a good analogy of how to describe the difference between them. So, thank you.
Again, nobody will necessarily relate to the MASH thing. They might get on board with,
hey,
you know,
all,
Law and Order,
I know is when MASH was on, I was up too late, bro. Or I woke up. I needed to turn the TV on. MASH was on. It was time to go to bed, son. I still hear that music and that chopper coming over the damn hill. Anyways, back to Tahiti. It's a magical place. And we're jumping. So where are we at now? We met these guys, and they're looking for Quinn, who we have because, you know, he shot Sky.
Yep.
Spoiler alert. And, yeah, we're going to go find some answers, I guess.
And they, I have here, I have the Wikipedia page open. So they start looking.
I mean, I know what happens. I just don't want, I don't know how much sometimes I'm supposed to say and I'm not supposed to say.
Well, I'll just,
you know, because it's different. Like, because I listen to the, so like for anybody out there who's doing this, I never listened to any of Paul's stuff really until Kevin turned me on. I wish that I'm going to do it when I rewatch Lost next time, but I have been listening to the Lost with Friends podcast after I watch Lost episodes now, if there's a correlating one. So it's kind of enjoyable to do that. But I know that's a different show and those are different discussions. So sometimes I don't know how much to say and not to say.
Well, first of all, I very much appreciate the fact that you listen to Lost with Friends. That still, every time, puts a smile on my face whenever somebody says that they listen to something that I've done. But no, I don't. It, when it comes to this, I mean, again, you know, and I think we've talked, you and I have talked about it off air. I've talked about it with other people. I don't necessarily want to get too much into, like, you know, what happens in Age of Ultron or Infinity War or, you know, the next, you know, Thor Ragnarok or something, because we still have quite a bit before we get there. But with regards to this, like, in theory, again, people have watched this episode if they're listening to this podcast, or, you know, this, yeah. So I, to me, if it's with regards to this episode, I don't really think that you can give too much away. You know, if you're recapping the plot of it.
Yeah, okay. So we got what we need. We kind of have our answers. We're going to go look for this house. Right? Wasn't it called the...
It was the guest house. Something house. The guest house.
Yeah, the guest house. Fitz and Simmons found it, right? They were, it was like a level 12 clearance or some shit, or
yeah,
the
level,
highest clearance.
Level 10, the highest clearance. Because I think they're all, I think to know about Coulson, you have to be at a level 7 or 8.
Okay. So level 10 is the highest clearance. I didn't take notes. That's kind of off the rip, dude. That's off the top of my head.
You're just
so
that,
yeah,
good.
So they... Oh man, yeah, I just like this. I like these episodes. This is because this episode was cool, man. Because we found Tahiti, and you know, they go in, and what happens down there is kind of weird. You know what I mean? Like the whole shebang.
Well, yeah, because one of the big things before they get there is because Fitz and Simmons are talking about. Like they're reading over Coulson's file and there's something about, you know, a hospital in Bethesda and whatever. And it turns out that none of that exists.
Yeah. They're looking for it and they can't find it. And so he tells them the truth, right? Regardless of their clearance or some shit. Doesn't he tell them the truth?
I think that's, it's either, let's see. According to, again, I have the Wikipedia page open. It says, Fitz and Simmons search through S.H.I.E.L.D.'s digital archives and find evidence of an old World War II bunker known as the Guest House with level 10 access. And then that's when they go there, and it's, if I'm not mistaken, Coulson, Ward, Garrett, and Triplett. Is that right? It's just, oh no, Fitz, I think Fitz is there as well.
I thought when they were looking for some doctor, he told them the truth at some point. It's not in there? Okay.
Well, because
I could have swore.
I think he did. I think that was when he gave them the file. because then they, if you remember, they did that. They brought up the thing, and there's like all the, like their digital. Remember last time there was the thing when they used the table.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, you're right. Okay, all right, you're right. You know me. Sometimes I'll be getting this things blurred together.
So they go there and they don't know. They get asked a question. Like they're, you know, they have to know like the answer to get in, and they don't know that answer.
Oh yeah, that's.
Do you know the part? Do you remember the part I'm talking about?
Fuck yeah, they. What's the question? You remember it?
Offhand, I can't. It was something like super. It was like, what's the? It's the. I don't even remember now.
I know. I want to be like what the one snowman say to the other snowman.
Smells like carrots.
Oh shit! That'll be a great inside joke. Hey, listen. I don't remember what was said, but I do remember the part you were talking about.
So, okay, I'm on the Marvel. Now I'm on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like Wikia page. And all it says that it's in somewhere in North America. The fact that it's, you know, an old World War II bunker.
Yeah, they roll up to the base, right? And they don't know something. They don't know the password, right?
Yeah, cuz there is a question, but they don't know the response to the question.
So they attack the base, right?
Yeah, because it seems like one of them knows him. Do you know what I mean? Like, it seems like one of them recognizes Coulson. There's two guys in there, and it seems like one of them recognizes him, but they don't. It's
protocol.
Yeah, exactly. Protocol. That's the word.
Yeah, it's protocol that no password. But yeah, I do remember that because the guards are kind of looking, and he does look like he recognizes them. You're right. I do remember that now.
But yeah, so then they eventually go in, and then there's a shootout, basically.
Yeah.
And they get the two guys, or however many guys are in there protecting the base. But what they find out when the last guy dies or is about to die, they set off a failsafe so that the people who were guarding it, the whole place would blow if they didn't put some code in X amount of time. And so that's when they find the GH, whatever it is, 325. And then they're getting it up to Sky, and then this is when Coulson does a little bit more digging. He sees the door that's marked Tahiti, goes inside, yeah. Sees that there's more vials marked GH, and then they all have different numbers on them, and then he discovers the secret, sort of what the GH serum is. And it is a blue alien corpse. And big spoiler alert, it is a Kree.
Yeah.
I'm sure you knew that. I don't know if any of the fans out there knew that. But that not only, again, spoiler, that is going to come into play later on, but 100%, if you're not a Marvel Comics fan, that is definitely from the comics, and it's a big alien species. Like, they're featured a lot, I believe, in the comics, right?
Yeah, they're huge. They're, like, really big throughout the comics. There's, like, that's what I'm saying. I know, like, it's cool to, and again, we've talked about this before, like, it's cool to see how they put these other comic book references into this, you know, and some of them play out to, you know, big things, and some of them are just nice little Easter eggs for the fans.
Yes.
You know, and this, you know, this, I mean, this one plays a little bigger of a part, but, you know, it was cool to see, but it also, you know, you have Coulson finding this, you know, this is a man who's been searching for these answers of how he was, you know, how he's been left alive. And, you know, he got some of them and now he's finding the rest of them, and to find this and to know that that's pumping through your blood and it's inside of you. Yeah, I can't imagine what that would feel like.
Well, and that's part of the reason that he like freaks out as the whole place is like crumbling around him, you know, and he goes and he tries telling them not to put it into Sky, because not only does he know, and it's partly because of, you know, the false memories that they gave him and so on and so forth, but he knows sort of what's been happening to him, and he doesn't know what else might be happening to him. And now to have this, you know, little bit of knowledge, and now Sky is going to, you know, have the same stuff or even a different reaction, because he doesn't know what the reaction could be to this alien, whether it's blood or DNA or whatever, you know. And so he actually tries to get them to not give her the injection, but they do it anyway. Or, well, they've already done it, I guess, by the time he gets there. But yeah.
Yeah, by the time he gets there, you're too late, Coulson. Sorry, homie. You know? I get why he didn't. You know, I understand that to a point. But, you know, like you said, you know, he had false memories. He had different things. He is not Sky. You know? Sky is not Coulson or anyone else, for that matter. You know, so like you said, there's no saying what reaction might happen. So, I mean, I get where he's coming from, but at the same time, like, you know, the chance to have of living is so much higher, in my opinion, that to me that outweighs it. And I really have to say, you know, if I was in that position, I would want you to give it to me, even with the side effects.
Well, to be fair, I mean, though, look, you just want Sky to keep living.
Well, no. I'm talking about me, even with the side effects, because let's be fair. They sell millions of those dumb fucking pills on the TV with all kinds of fucking, this will bloat you, make you shit your pants, cry blood, fucking die and shit at the wheel of a car. And they sell that shit on TV left and right. So, you know what? If I got to get some alien blood in me and have some fucked up memories and have some knowledge and other shit to live, give it to me.
There it is, everybody. He's on record. So one day, you know.
One day, if I'm dying, give me the alien blood.
So with this, again, like I said, sort of at the beginning of the episode or near the beginning, this... And, I mean, obviously, it sets up many questions, which I think a good TV show should, but it also answers one of the questions that we've had from the very beginning. And, of course, we thought we had that answer a few episodes ago when Coulson talked with the doctor, and the doctor, you know, told him, like, oh, we actually kept you alive for several days and whatever, but, you know, Coulson kept digging and needed more of an answer this time. Just in terms of, you know, a little bit more, because it would help Sky. But now we've got this answer. And I believe Quinn even mentions that this whole thing was almost a test by the clairvoyant for Coulson, because either he would let Sky die or, much like Fury, he would move the world to let her live. And then the clairvoyant could get this answer, theoretically, for how did Coulson survive, or how did he, you know, whatever. But so with all of that now, and having, and again, you, I know you know a little bit more and whatever, but up until this point, what did you think of this answer finally? And, you know, it took 14 episodes, but we got this answer to a question arguably from the very beginning of the series, And now not only do we have the answer a little bit of how Coulson survived, we have the answer of what Tahiti is and all that sort of stuff. So now 14 episodes in, how do you as a first time watcher feel about this revelation? And almost, again, it sets up more story, but it's also kind of the end of a particular story arc.
I'll tell you right now, one, I did not expect to get the answer this soon. I get most people are going to be like, but it's been 14 episodes. Yeah, but this is a big backbone of the story. So it goes to show you that there's so much more to this show coming, which also excites me. Because the answer to this means they're going to have so many more questions to be answered, which means this show is going to have a lot more layers to it. Excites me. I'm cool with this. You got micro robots in your brain keeping you alive, and then alien DNA blood is basically what, like, is keeping you alive or brought you back, so to speak. Totally believable. I'm cool with it. Let's do it.
Well, that's good.
I got no beef with it. I had no like outside, oh no, they should have done this differently. I was like, you know, even Coulson finding out the way he found out, like they did it right. Him being, you know, hesitant and uneasy about it and not sitting right 100% with him. That's good. That's, it shouldn't. I went on record saying, give it to me. I'm not saying I'm not going to sit uneasy with the decision, but I'm going to be glad I'm alive.
Well, yeah.
So I feel like as somebody like who really can tap into some emotion and put some thought into it, that, you know, once again, and, you know, we said it before, they did a great job of the writing, giving us what we needed. They gave us our answers. They set up some more questions. As a first-time viewer, I'm extremely satisfied. It keeps me wanting to watch more. Again, as a first-time viewer, I want to watch more. Because like I said, now I'm like, wow, they're going to give me an answer to such a big question so soon? Ooh, this isn't a big question then. This has layers. There's more going on here. I can't wait to see. Or what else does this tie into? Maybe this isn't just some simple answer here. Maybe this is just a little answer tied into a bigger question with a bigger answer somewhere down the line.
Well, because part of it also, as much as, you know, as true as that could be or is or whatever, it's also now a matter of how, you know, like we talked about, how is Sky going to react to this? The same or different from Coulson? How is Coulson going to react knowing that he has this alien whatever flowing through him? How is he going to react to you know, anything, you know, because anything Sky does seemingly out of the ordinary, as we see in the very next episode, which we'll get to momentarily, you know, he wants to keep her out of the field for as long as he can, because he doesn't know how she's going to react. He wants to have Fitzsimmons running tests because he doesn't know how anything, you know, how she's going to react, or he doesn't really know anything about this alien, like we said, blood or DNA or whatever. So he wants, I mean, as much as he has the answer now to how did I, you know, survive, now, like we said, it leads to more questions, and it's very much what is his reaction to a lot of this going to be. And this is where that whole, you know, character versus story argument kind of comes together, because the story is, I don't want to say it's done, like we said, you know, it's not done in the sense that there is more to it, but the story of what happened to Coulson, how did he survive, that's arguably done, but now it leads into the bigger character development of what does this mean to Coulson? What is the aftermath of this discovery? And that's kind of the next chapter for his character.
No, and I get, and I totally get that. I mean, he's, and he plays, you know, what we're going to get into it in the next episode. So I'll save my comments for what I think about Coulson in the next one.
Well, do we have anything else with regards to, I mean, there is that, that brief scene, at the end of Tahiti that very much leads us into the next episode. But other than that,
yeah, I was going to say, like, yeah, this episode starts off with a banger and ends with a banger. So,
But so do we want to go with that end scene right into the next episode?
Let's roll with it.
All right. So we end Tahiti with I'll just read it directly from Wikipedia here. It says, in an end tag, a mysterious woman named Lorelei convinces a man to leave his new bride and drive off with her. And I didn't realize until I read the credits, and this is one that, you know, we've talked many times on this show. We reference Lost with Friends. I've talked about it there. I'm somebody who I read the credits a lot. I never realized that guy, who also appears in the beginning of the next one, that's Jim Belushi's son.
Who is it?
In real life, yeah, you know, that's, you know, well, John Belushi, yeah, of course, everybody knows from Saturday Night Live, Jim Belushi, yeah, that's Jim Belushi's son, the guy that leaves his bride, and he's, you know, featured into the beginning of the next episode. Yeah, he's one of the Belushi family members.
Oh, that's awesome. I did not know that. That is a cool little fun fact to know.
Yeah. But of course, that leads us into episode 15, which is Yes Men, which, similar to another episode from earlier this season, is a tie-in with Thor: The Dark World. It features one of my absolute favorites, not only from Marvel, but just in terms of acting overall, Ms. Jamie Alexander as Lady Sif. I absolutely adore her in pretty much anything that she's in, and I will watch it. We also get the guy who plays Sitwell setting up not only the next episode, but, you know, getting ready to set up the Captain America, the Winter Soldier story. And we get a few other good Marvel Cinematic Universe tie-ins, and I will address those in a little bit. But this episode, the Asgardian Lorelei basically has the power, they don't say it flat out, but she basically has the powers of a siren, of, you know, the old legends of the sirens who use their voice and their charm to lure men and, in this case, you know, bend them to their will, and tries to take over. Lady Sif comes to Earth and tries to take her down. I loved this episode because this was it was a case of the week episode. Maybe it was because Lady Sif was there and I love her. And again, I love Jamie Alexander, the actress, but I really liked this episode. It was case of the week, but again, it had some of that continuing thing. Like we talked about, Coulson doesn't want to put Sky into the field. You know, we get a little bit of Ward and May's storyline that we haven't touched on in, you know, an episode or two and whatever. And there were all the, it hit the right moments of the continuing stories in the case of the week episode, and I loved it overall.
Yeah, you're right. That's why I didn't really, I guess, say I felt like there was a case of the week. It ties into Thor. You have, you know, like you said, the points of our continued story hitting in the right moments that I guess it didn't feel so case of the weekish. But, you know, looking at it, you know, now thinking about it, I could see how it is that episode out of this batch, but it doesn't feel like it enough to call it the case of the week episode. And like you said, I really enjoyed this this episode. I don't know too much about what else she's done, but you know, I'll watch her in anything too.
So I touched on it briefly in the discussion of Thor: The Dark World, because actually Steve, who was on that episode, he said he didn't know too much about her outside of the Marvel thing. So she had a show on NBC for a few years called Blind Spot. I only ever watched the first season. I never got past the first season, only because I got caught up in doing other things. I've always planned to go back to it. That's the show, for anybody who may not know the show by name, that's the one where she has all the tattoos, and then she works for the FBI. She has to figure out what's... I think Steve said he started watching it because it was similar to Memento, the film. And the first thing I ever saw her on was an old ABC Family show called Kyle XY. And basically she appeared in season 2, I think, of that show. And she was basically like the main character, where she was like a clone sort of thing. She's actually supposed to be...
I remember this show.
Do you know that show? Okay.
Kyle XY?
Yeah.
I do remember this for some reason.
She was supposed to be a clone of Ally Sheedy, who appeared... She was in The Breakfast Club and like sort of those Brat Pack movies of the 80s. And she was actually there, Ally Sheedy. And if you put them side by side, they do look similar enough to each other. But yeah, ever since she showed up sort of in that series many, many years ago, I've kind of kept tabs on her because I thought she was really good in that show. And I think she does a really good accent as Lady Sif, which not many Americans can do accents very well, in my opinion. But I think she does a really good accent. And I think, like I said, I think the character is a very good character. I wish they had gotten more of her. Of course, as I said, she went on to do this series for NBC, so they couldn't bring her back to the Marvel stuff too often. But yeah, I liked this episode because it almost seemed like it could have been the setup for a spinoff in a way. But I just really like and this is one of those ones where it gives us similar to the Trax episode, like we talked about, I think it was Trax, where it was that, it gave us that cinematic feeling, and it was, the case of the week sort of thing, but it feels almost like a mini movie, and it doesn't hurt that one of the characters from the films, that being Lady Sif, actually shows up here. They reference, once again, they reference the Asgardians and all that sort of stuff. And I really liked this episode. And again, going along with, like I said, giving us the continuing stories, Coulson doesn't want Skye in the field. May and Ward's relationship gets discussed. Ward's true feelings about someone else on his team get discussed. We get to see how Coulson reacts and how the women... Because there's one of the major points in this is that women aren't affected by Lorelai, but men are. So we see how Ward reacts to her. We see how Fitz reacts to her. And then we see how Coulson reacts to them, because he is not under her control.
Right.
And that's,
that whole kind of off the wall, rambunctious, things are kind of going haywire. She's infecting this guy, she's infecting that guy, and I shouldn't say infect. She's enchanting that guy, but bitch is really infecting them. So you have this whole like haywire thing going on, and I like how, like you said, Coulson's not being affected. It's kind of like watching what's going on, and then you get to see, how the women start reacting to, this, and when she can't use that against them, she uses the knowledge of what she knows of these men against the women. She flat out tells May that Ward's in love with Skye in this episode.
Wait, okay, so with that, So when you, I mean, we talked about it with the whole with the whole Ward May thing, you were surprised. Were you
very?
But were you as surprised when it's finally revealed here that
he's in love with it? That he's in love with Skye? Not at all, because we're guys, and a lot of times we're fucking in love with one woman, but unfortunately, we're still men. And we're over here doing something else. And sometimes it's not just because we want to get some. Sometimes we're just not being honest with ourselves. We're still human.
Fair enough.
You know, and he's caught up in this, you know, and at first it was definitely, I'm sure, physical. It was a physical thing between him and May, you know, that I don't think was supposed to go into anything, and not saying it went into anything, but I don't think it definitely stayed what they both intended it to stay when they got into it.
I would argue that's literally always the case.
Well, yeah, but
one person,
you know,
always catches feelings.
I don't feel like he was like, I feel like when it came out and when he was under a spell, he wasn't all like, yeah, that's really how it is. I feel like he generally, like, it generally, like, bothered him a little bit that that's how it came out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't like, oh, fuck you, May. Like, that's just how it is. Like, I guess it's out. Like, he still generally had, like, as heartless as he is, it's still not like he wanted that. That's not how he wanted it to come out, for it to come out. You know what I mean? It's not like he wanted it to be, like, a hurtful thing for someone who hurts the shit out of people.
Right. Well, yeah, even though theirs wasn't a romantic relationship, there are still caring feelings, whether that's on a friendship level or a romantic level or whatever. She is someone that he does not want to hurt in any way.
Right. No, and you're right. But I just, you know, it just shows, I felt it shows some kind of compassion inside of him, which you don't see at all. I feel like that being brought out in the open might, as a first time watcher, I would hope that that's going to be something that, oh, he's in love with Skye. Like, that's the light that's going to bring him out of wherever he is. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, it's actually something that you and I talked about in our personal lives. Because again, for those who don't necessarily know, may not remember, Ellsworth and I are new friends through this podcast, and we've now since, you know, become, we talk, you know, pretty much
we
a lot.
We talk, maybe, and you talk more than me and Kevin do. So
yeah, same. And so we were talking about the whole concept of men and women have that thing, not all, but both, the fact that both have that thing of liking the bad boy or the bad girl because they think I'm gonna be the one to save them. And so that's arguably what it is here. Ward is the bad guy, and we as the audience hope that Skye will be the one to bring out the good boy in him, basically.
Yes. And that's, you know, that's, and look, I'm sitting here knowing I know that that's damn near impossible. And I'm sitting here watching it, rooting for it to happen. 'Cause that's how blindly hopeful I am for that kind of shit to happen. Even though I know it's not going to, because deep down I'm still a hopeless romantic, and, you know, I believe that the good in people can be brought out, though it can't.
I pretty much feel the same way. I feel like for a lot of I don't want to say future generations, but for a lot of people sort of our generation, there's also very much a Star Wars influence from that, you know, the whole, you know, you can be say, you know, somebody can bring you back from the dark side of the Force sort of thing.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, I get that. A lot of times the only way that happens is the kids involved.
You're not wrong.
I mean, the only time that bad boy or that bad girl gets saved or brought to the other side, it wasn't because they were like, it was done, you know, by like willpower. No, usually a kid was involved, and it was a life-changing thing that had to happen.
Yeah, because the romantic interest isn't the love of their life that changes them. It's the kid that is the love of their life that changes them.
I mean, that's what happens when you just do the whole whatever you want to do because you're attracted to somebody who's bad boy or bad girl or whatever the case may be. Instead of sitting down and talking to a motherfucker and getting to know them, the insides and out. And back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I was going to say, yeah, not to get too personal here.
We are wrapping up here with, you know, this, like you said, this was a, there's not much here other than we touched on the fact that we get a little bit of the things that continue our story. You know, May and Ward are done. We get, you know, we find out what we just talked about. Coulson tells Skye what they put into her in this towards the end of this episode as well. Correct?
Yes. And we find out.
Isn't it where it cuts to like music? It's a cinematic, very cinematic scene, right? It cuts to just music. And he's like telling her.
Yes.
By himself, like, and like May's watching. And like, I feel like I remember this because she starts crying. It's a very like, it's a very kind of touching.
Well, this, so he tells her. And then May is listening in. She has like a listening device. And then
that's right. That's where this is.
And then she gets on a secure line and just says, you know, she does whatever it is. She gives some sort of code of like, you know, checking in. This is my X number, check in, whatever. And then she just simply says, Coulson knows.
Yes. Okay. Now I remember this. Yep, you're right. Gotcha.
The only few things I wanted to point out, little, you know, trivia bits about this episode are, one, when I was watching this, Ward takes, Lorelai wants a kingdom, you know, because at one point she's with the Belushi guy.
And then she goes to the biker gang.
And then she goes to the biker gang and she wants gold and they bring her paper, as she comments. There, of course, the hilarious joke of she thinks Benjamin Franklin is a woman. The biker guy is so not intelligent that he thinks Benjamin Franklin was one of our presidents. He isn't, for anybody out there who still may be confused. Benjamin Franklin, not one of our presidents. And you know, he says that it's the equivalent to gold.
Like to clear that up. Benjamin Franklin is not one of our presidents. Okay. I know some of you are hard to hear. He's not one of our presidents. Just because he's on money. He was not one of our presidents. All right. Sorry. Continue.
You know, he tries to convince her that's the equivalent of gold. It, you know, it's the currency of the day. Then she gets, control
that's
of
the
Ward.
Truth the day
she gets control of Ward. She wants a kingdom, so he takes her to Las Vegas. There's a moment, and if it's funny, as of the time of recording, there's a moment where they pass by a spot where Britney Spears had a residency there. And I don't know if you're aware, Ellsworth, of the whole Twitter thing going on right now about Britney Spears.
I read something here or there. I don't know. We can talk off air for a moment about it. Maybe you can get me up to speed. But
very, very briefly, I had a good chuckle about it because very briefly, I will fill you in if you want more details off air. But very briefly, for those not aware, there's a conspiracy theory going around that Britney Spears is not in control. Well, legally, she is not in control of her own life. But there's a theory going around that she is not in control of her own life. She is being manipulated in more ways than one. So seeing her picture in this episode where Lorelai is manipulating people made me chuckle. That's all I'm going to say about that in terms of what's going on in this show. The other little tidbits...
Yo.
Go ahead.
I like that. Don't hate me for this. I feel like, you know, I don't know if it's just because you're that kind of guy too, but I feel like that's something Kevin, like the type of detail Kevin would point out too. It'd be that, and like not everybody would chuckle about it, but I guess the fact that you just brought it up, that like I want to rewatch the episode just for that because I get a kick out of that because that's the only thing I did know. I did know that people think she's being manipulated, like her life's being totally controlled. I know financially her life's under control, but like I know that people think like what time the bitch brushes her teeth she's being told.
Right. And again, it's just because of the fact that that's going on right now when we happen to be watching and discussing this that it just popped into my head of like, oh, there's kind of an irony there.
It is.
Other little tidbits, of course, Lady Sif says that Odin sent her down. And of course, by this point, we know that Odin isn't actually Odin. It's Loki in disguise, as we found out in Thor the Dark World. So that's a little bit that I'm not sure how many people necessarily picked up on. And according to Wikipedia here, very briefly, with the appearance of Asgardians Sif and Lorelai, the former mentions that the latter escaped prison during the Dark Elf attack, as depicted in Thor the Dark World. And the guy, it's Hernandez, the guy who plays Sitwell, he reprises his role from the films and talks to Coulson about the whereabouts of S.H.I.E.L.D. director Nick Fury, who appears in Captain America the Winter Soldier alongside Sitwell. Of course, we'll be discussing that very soon. And this part I also thought was interesting. The episode also introduces the motorcycle gang Dogs of Hell, whose New York chapter is later seen in the second season of Daredevil. And yes, folks, we will be getting to that corner of the MCU sooner than you think. But there's also a brief little thing that this motorcycle gang, the Dogs of Hell, will be coming back. And by then, we'll probably reference back to, remember all the way back in season one of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? That's this time. So there you go. There's all my little tidbits for this episode.
Oh, that's cool, man. Those are good little fun facts. I like those.
And then we move on to the last episode that we will be discussing in this episode of the podcast, End of the Beginning. And I feel this is arguably the perfect title for this episode because, as we've talked about kind of since the beginning of covering Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., after this episode is where the show, for a lot of people, quote unquote, starts to pick up. Now, again, as we've talked about over the course of these last few podcasts, the show and the good quality of the show is there if you're willing to watch the show and look for it. But for a lot of people, this was the end of the beginning because, you know, as we'll discuss in upcoming episodes of the show, big twist happens, so on and so forth. It sets up sort of the next big, you know, several story arcs of it, whatever. But this is end of the beginning. And I didn't dislike the episode. If ironically, if I had to choose, it would probably be this one out of the three that I liked the least. And I know that's a little odd because this gives us a lot of story and character moments, but I feel like because I know what comes next, meaning Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and what happens in the next few episodes of the show, I kind of was just, okay, let's get through this to move on, in a way.
You know, I mean, I guess getting to know that, but as a first-time viewer, this was a great episode. I mean, it's packed with everybody. I mean, you know, this has a lot of the major players of this TV show in this episode.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, a lot of your big dogs. So I get, you know, where you might be coming from. I really like this episode, though, man. I know what's coming because I've watching the movies, you know, but not in the show. But this episode, it opened up with a punch, and yeah, I really enjoyed, you know, what we got from this episode as far as the story arcs of the different characters, because again, we have most of your characters in here from S.H.I.E.L.D.
And again, I like the episode. I'm just saying, out of these three.
You can't retract your statement.
I'm not retracting.
You can't retract your statement. Okay, you're done.
I'm not retracting my statement.
It's signed, it's sealed, it's delivered. Nah, it's okay.
No. Like I said, at the beginning of this, I liked all three. I did. I'm just saying, out of these three, this one I liked the least.
You're just into what's her name. That's just not fair.
The one that plays Lady Sif, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Because
yes,
I did that. But that episode wasn't, like, it was cinematic, but it wasn't nearly as, like, juicy as what this episode is as far as what the show is overall.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Because, like you said, this has, and I'll go through it a little bit here. We get... Not only do we get Coulson, you know, and obviously Sky and May and all of our characters that we have, you know, Fitzsimmons, Ward, we get the return of Sitwell. We get the return of Victoria Hand, played by Saffron Burroughs. We get Felix Blake, played by Titus Welliver, who Lost fans may know as the Man in Black. Sons of Anarchy fans may know as... Jimmy something or other, I think, from Ireland. You know, we get the return of J. August Richards as Mike Peterson, also known as Deathlok. We get the return of Garrett, Bill Paxton. We get the return of B.J. Britt as Antoine Triplett. Did I miss anybody that's returning?
That's everybody that's returning.
And then we get Brad Dourif, if I pronounced his surname correctly, as the character of Thomas Nash. That was a big coup for them, because of course he is from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and played Chucky in the
yes.
Child's Play movies. So that's obviously a big coup for them to get that actor. And major character moments here, major story moments here. I'm not disagreeing with any of that. And like you said, as probably because I know what the next few episodes are, it lessens this one for me. But that would be, again, upon a rewatch, that would be probably why I put this one a little bit lower than the previous two.
And I get that, again, you know. And that's the beautiful part of having this, you know, discussion with someone who's watched it as a first-time viewer like myself, and someone like yourself who's watched it and rewatching it, because you get to catch so many things and bring up things, and then you get the point of view for the viewers or listeners, whatever we're calling your people out there in the world of listening land, that, you know, they get the point of view of first time. And I really enjoyed this episode, and you know, I definitely get it, and that's what I love about opinions. They're a little different, and that's what makes for such a good discussion. You named off all the big names that are in this, and it's cool because we start off with we start off with Deathlok coming at Garrett and his little dude. I keep forgetting his name, but
Triplett.
Yeah, Triplett. Coming at them, which when you know things later on, is kind of ironic.
Yes.
Is
That's
it
all
not?
I could say, but yes.
So anyways, we're going to go, you got the bang bang with them. So they go looking for the Garrett and them to go link up with the rest of them, right? Isn't that what happens?
Yes. Well,
they link up.
Yeah, it says here, weeks later, Coulson recruits Garrett, Triplett, Victoria Hand, Felix Blake, and Jasper Sitwell to join his team to hunt down the Clairvoyant and Deathlok.
Gotcha, okay.
And then because Coulson is now of the belief that there may actually be a psychic out there, because he's seemingly always been of the belief that there aren't such things as psychic. There might be powered people out there, but not necessarily psychics. And a few of them, I believe, Hand being one of them in particular, sort of calls him out on this. And then they decide to go back through some of the people that maybe they dismissed. And they come up with a system. I don't exactly remember how it goes, but basically they're going to get paired off.
I do. Yeah, I do. They use Sky. She comes up with coordinates, and then the targets, I believe, some of the address or the information, so that, like, one person get, like, no two people have the information. Like, they don't know, no one person in the team has all the information to get to that person, that they have to get there in a pair.
Yeah, because we don't know who might be, or who, you know, if the clairvoyant could read somebody's mind or whatever, if the information
right. they,
is
yeah, they don't
spread
want, yeah,
out.
They don't.
Yeah.
That's their goal, is to keep it, yeah, under,
well,
like, lock and key.
Well, to have her do that, let's not skip over the fact that this, they grant her the...
She becomes an official S.H.I.E.L.D. member.
Yes.
Which is a really big fucking deal.
Well, yeah, what was it we said, with the Tahiti episode, something about, like, you know, oh, it took 14 episodes. This only took 16.
Yeah, but this has a little bit more of a sweet sorrow to it.
Explain.
It's very bitter. What?
Explain, please.
Because of what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Because of what this meant to her. You know, I mean, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I know what's going to happen. As a first-time watcher, it's amazing. You're like, holy shit. Like, you know, she's finally being recognized as a good guy, as one of the team members, as somebody who's trying to do good. And she's been trying to break away from, you know... For a minute, she was playing that double thing, and then she really put the good foot forward. And, you know, it's nice to see the hard work pay off. You know, that recognition, you know, as much as we don't need to be validated, we still enjoy, and it is still nice to be recognized and validated by our peers, especially the ones that we respect.
Yes. And the fact that, like, because I believe it's Hand that says, you know, oh, she'd need to be an agent and whatever, and Coulson says, you know, basically, let's do that. So the fact that they are there seemingly giving their approval when, as we talked about a few episodes ago, or, you know, last episode or whatever it was, Hand was the one who was, you know, like, first one to say, Sky isn't an agent, she shouldn't be here. And for her to be there when Sky gets her badge, she may not agree, but literally by being in the room, she's, you know, kind of in agreement with
approving. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree, and that's a big deal, and that's one of those little things that is, you know, could be, you know, I like to think that with the way they write the show that, you know, is, you know, it was meant to, you know, kind of play out that way. You know, again, she was the one who wanted it off the ship, so she's the one who said, oh, she would have to have clearance to do that. Boom, it happens. She didn't disagree with it because she didn't leave the room. She didn't, you know, put up a fight. So, and that's a big deal in and of itself. Again, you know, this is a big win moment for Sky. And as someone who's a fan of Sky, you like to cheer. You jump up on the couch. You do the little freaking Oprah dance where you dance on the couch like you're on Oprah. And you're a little guy, you know what I mean? I don't want to get sued saying names.
Sorry, so, that really got me.
So yeah, no, you know, it's a win for her, and you know, it's a nice win for her, and you know, I got to leave it at that because I anything else I say is spoiling what's to come.
Well, so, okay, so continuing on, she's, you know, like you said, she's going to devise this plan, and because of storyline purposes with regards to the film, as we'll find out in the next episode of this podcast, Sitwell gets called away to go to the Lumerian Star, which comes into play in Captain America, and somebody else, I think... Does Blake have to leave too? I think he's not there. Right? Or no,
yeah,
he goes with May. He gets teamed up with May, now that I remember it.
Yeah.
Because let's see. Triplet and Ward are partnered together. Just Triplet, who is partnered with Ward, is revealed to harbor a grudge against the Clairvoyant for killing his partner. Coulson, Garrett, May, and Blake are assigned to other locations. However, Blake is ambushed by Deathlok. And Deathlok specifically declares Mike Peterson is dead.
Okay, yeah. I do remember that.
And then he takes down Blake. Deathlok takes down Blake. May attacks him, or, you know, basically tries shooting at him. And then Coulson and... It says, the team concludes that the target May and Blake were following, Thomas Nash, is their prime suspect, because basically why else would Deathlok have been there? And what they find out is when Blake was shooting at Deathlok, he shot a tracker bullet, which Fitzsimmons came up with. Because what we forgot to mention in the previous episode, which my mistake for forgetting that, they have the... Because they no longer call them the night... It's no longer the night gun... They call them icers.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
He tried to say it all cool or something.
Yeah. Because there's a specific part where Ward, you know, he says, Fitz says, you know, it's no longer the night gun. And Ward is like, thank God. And he also talks about getting rid of that ounce, which is a callback to a previous episode. So when, but they also had these tracker bullets, which basically do like scientists do for animals. You know, they put the little, they put like a little band on them and it tracks their movements. You know, you could put them in your, you know, your dogs or your, it's like a GPS basically. And Blake thought ahead and shot four, I think they said it was four regular bullets and one tracking bullet. So they're able to track down Deathlok to an abandoned horse race track. Triplet and Simmons stay behind at the hub with Hand. I'm just glancing at the Wikipedia article now. They find Nash. After a brief battle with Deathlok, Coulson and Garrett discover Nash, who is in a vegetative state, but seems to communicate through a speech-generating device. Nash, boasting that he is the clairvoyant, claims he can see everything and threatens to kill Sky, causing an enraged Ward to shoot him dead. But of course, as Coulson starts to question later on in the episode, and I, you know, in retrospect, I questioned it quite a bit. This character doesn't say anything. He doesn't, his eyes move a little bit, but we never fully get confirmation that this is him. Coulson seems to think that Ward shooting him means that Ward is in cahoots, perhaps, or got, you know, word to shoot this guy, but Ward claims that that is not the case at all. And then eventually, Sky and Coulson come to the conclusion that the clairvoyant doesn't have psychic powers. The clairvoyant just has security clearance and that it is someone within S.H.I.E.L.D. And at the same time, Fitz and Simmons have discovered May's secret line.
The bat line.
And I believe somewhere in here, maybe it was even before this, Coulson kind of questions May, and there's all sorts of, you know, who is everybody, you know, who are you working for? Who are you working for? Who can I trust on my own team sort of things right. happening. And as we find out between this episode, Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and the next episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., all of these events are happening at the same exact time.
Right.
Because there's one point where Simmons is on with Fitz and says that, you know, a bunch of agents are rushing one of the rooms, and we then see that in the Captain America film. And like I said, all three of these stories are happening sort of at the same time. The last few sentences here on the Wikipedia thing says, while Coulson accuses a defensive Ward of shooting Nash to misdirect them on the clairvoyant's true identity, Fitz informs Sky of the secret phone line. Coulson is informed of May's secret line and alongside Sky confronts her. As May tries to explain that she could not disclose who is on the other end of the line, the plane is remotely hijacked. At the hub, Hand is revealed to be the one that commissioned the hijack and orders her subordinates to kill the agents except for Coulson, saying, quote, he's mine.
Yep.
And I think that's this weird. Did a fantastic job of not only leading us into the Captain America film, if you're one of the people like myself, and hopefully like anybody who's listening to this, if you're doing a rewatch or even a first time watch, this leads fantastically into Captain America, the Winter Soldier. As I said, this episode, that film, and the next episode all take place at the same time. And once you see how the storyline plays out, you understand why that ending leads into the film and leads into the next episode. But even if you've seen just the films, you know this episode leads incredibly well into the next episode. you know, almost seamlessly if you have knowledge of what happens in the films. And I think this was all done very, very, very well.
Very well. No, they did a great job. As a first-time viewer, they got me right now, man. This is, by this point, they got you. And if they don't, there's something wrong with you. They got you. And yes, you know, I mean, as someone who already knew what was going to happen with, you know, I've talked about it before. I knew what was going to happen with Captain America. So I've been waiting to see how they get to this point, what they do to lead us into and lead us out of what happens in Captain America.
And one of the benefits, and it's something we will be talking about, you know, on the podcast very soon, but one of the benefits is the fact that the writers of this show had the knowledge of what the films were going to do, so they were able to set this up with this episode and then, of course, play off of it in the aftermath.
Yeah, perfectly. Yeah, no, I mean,
it's something that anybody who's doing a rewatch who has seen more of the series knows, and something that if you're a first-time watcher, you will definitely learn. I think I may have mentioned it in a previous episode or two, but basically, this show is a weekly advertisement for the film universe. So what they do, even with, you know, as we know, films such as Guardians of the Galaxy and Doctor Strange and, you know, things like that, that don't necessarily have moments where you can cross them over with the TV series, there are a minor spoiler here for upcoming seasons overall and the, you know, the series overall of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. There are things that tie in with whatever's going on, meaning space-related things are going to be introduced. We saw it already. There is an alien. Like, you know what I mean? So it's not everything really too much of a spoiler for me to say.
They tie into everything going on.
Yeah, so when Guardians happens, you know,
there's going to be Guardians. There's going to be shit from the Guardians corner of the universe is going to leak into this, and we're going to get to see that universe from a different corner of that universe in this universe. Like, correct?
Kinda, yeah. Like, it may not necessarily cross over like this. Like even with regards to Thor, like Lady Sif shows up, or there was that previous episode where there was an Asgardian.
Yeah, this
there
was early not... on though. I don't expect it to be quite the same as we get deeper into the series necessarily.
Yeah, but there is references to magic, and there are references to space related things. Even if the Guardians or even secondary characters from the Guardians of the Galaxy don't show up, there's definitely references to space related things, showing you that these characters, you know, still exist within the same universe, and they, you know, certain things do ripple back.
Yes, sir.
And that's very much what this this episode, like we said, End of the Beginning, like I said, arguably the most perfect title for an episode of this series. That's what this did, is this very much sets up Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and then, of course, sets up what happens in the fallout from that film. Did I miss anything? Did we miss anything in regards to any of these three episodes?
Man, we don't miss much. We really don't. Not with this. It's hard for us to, man. We're, you know, we get into it. We got it all covered. You know, I didn't get a chance to dig up any of the little credits like I did or Kevin does, but I mean, I just, other than that, again, like I've said, as a first-time watcher, at this point, I'm loving where the show's going. You know, the tie-ins are great. I'm really excited to see what's going to happen next.
So episode, just very quickly, because you said about the credits, so I double checked. So episodes 14 and 16 were directed by Bobby Roth, who I believe has directed maybe earlier in the season. But
he did Lost and Fringe too.
Yes, he did Lost. He did Fringe. He did a few episodes of Flash Forward. He did V. He did several episodes of this. He's done Grey's Anatomy as well. He's very much TV director, ABC director, it seems like, with regards to a lot of things. He has also done things for CBS. He did some episodes of the show Scorpion and Hawaii Five-0. So he's very much a known TV director. The writers, Jeff Bell, of course, one of the co-showrunners, did Tahiti, so that makes perfect sense that one of the top guys, we talked about that last time with regards to if one of their names, whether it's Jeff Bell, Jed Whedon, or Marissa Tanker-Owen are there, you know that something big is going to sort of happen in that episode. So he did Tahiti. The writer for Yes Men, it doesn't have a Wikipedia link. I couldn't even tell you how to actually pronounce the name, so I'm not quite sure. I haven't done too much digging there. And End of the Beginning is written by Paul. Surname, we still, after all these years, whether it's on Lost with Friends or MCU and Me, we cannot pronounce. It's the surname beginning with a Z or Z to our international friends. But definitely, if you've listened to any of these shows, you know his credits, you know he's done Lost, you know he's done this, you know he's done many other things that you probably, have enjoyed in the past. With all of that said, do we have anything else we want to discuss with these three episodes before we head out of here?
No, I'm ready. I can't wait for the next, man. The next is that's where the shit gets real, son.
So
I'm excited.
I am very excited as well. And if they, the listeners, are just as excited and they want to let you know, let me know anything, where can they get in touch with you, Ellsworth, across all the corners of the internet?
You can get in touch with me at The Magician, TheMagishn on Twitter, or Ellsworth Certified on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you.
For me, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JPGRB. You can follow my secondary Instagram at JPCS.PICS. I try to take at least one picture a day of things I'm doing. A lot of food stuff going on there, and my personal thoughts and feelings on things going on in my life as well. For all Clock Shelves related things on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, it's at Clock Shelves. That's CLOCKSHELVES. Again, that's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If you want to support, patreon.com/clockshelves. Once again, CLOCKSHELVES. And the central hub for everything, where you can hear all past episodes, get more information about everybody involved with all things that we do, it's clockshelves.com, CLOCKSHELVES.COM. All right, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for checking us out. Definitely hope that you will continue. Again, we referenced some stuff that we talked about in the archives, so you can obviously go check those out. Next episode of the podcast is going to be about Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Very excited for that episode. And then after that, of course, the fallout of that film and this episode, and the big twist that we have been teasing all season. Again, if you know, you know. If not, can't wait for you to hear, can't wait for you to see it and hear us talk about it. But until then, I will sign off with the traditional thanks for listening, true believers.